Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. The 13th annual International Fight Week is upon us, folks. UFC 317 goes down Saturday night. It is a big one. A new lightweight champion will be crowned in the main event when Ilia Topuria moves up from featherweight to fight former champion Charles Oliveira for the vacant belt left behind by Islam Makhachev. Then in the co-main event, Alexandre Pantoja, the flyweight champion, goes for his fourth defense of the belt against Kai Kara France. Spoke to both those guys over on MMA Junkie in recent days. You can go check that out on that YouTube channel if you so please. And we have a big show in store to preview these two big title fights, this big event, and we got the goods. We got good people here for you. To break down the flyweight side of things, it is going to be one of the great flyweights, in my opinion, maybe could have even been even greater, as you will hear him admit. It is Ian McCall, one of the founding fathers in the UFC of this weight class. He is going to give some insights on what he's been up to, his thoughts on the current champion, the challenger, a little talk on the other flyweight fight on that card between Brandon Royval and Joshua Van. Good stuff from Uncle Creepy. If you don't know him, anyone out there, because he's been out of the game for a little bit, almost 7 years retired, go watch his fights, especially his first one with Demetrius Johnson. This man may have been robbed from being the inaugural flyweight champion, but it doesn't end there. To break down our lightweight title main event, it is none other than El Diamante, the Diamond, Dustin Poirier, joining us on the show once again. He was here back in October, I think episode 4 of the program, to break down Ilia Topuria versus Max Holloway. You guys loved it. We got him back for more, just a few weeks out from his retirement fight at UFC 318 against Max Holloway. Can't thank Dustin enough for taking the time mid-camp to do that. You can tell he just got back from the gym, was hurting, all that stuff, but a great guy, always willing to give the time, and could not be more thankful that he did that and joined us. And just amazing insight and analysis, as always, from Dustin Poirier. Before we get into things, though, have a little bit of an announcement to make. It's a big one, folks. We're very excited here. For the first time, I'm very proud to announce a sponsor for the Bonfire Podcast. It has come. It is time. We are so happy to welcome the people at mybookie.ag to the Bonfire family. Can't thank them enough for their support, putting their faith behind the show, behind me. There will be details of that coming up in the Dustin Poirier segment. We'll talk a little bit about odds and that type of stuff around Topuria versus Oliveira. So keep a close eye. Be on the lookout for the promo code, the link, all that good stuff. Show your support by signing up through that. It would mean the world to me if you are one of the people who like to wager on this great sport of mixed martial arts. So what a week, what a time. We are very happy. Of course, the elephant in the room. I know I haven't addressed it yet. This whole John Jones saga, his retirement coming a few days ago now. We're still dealing with the fallout of all that, with the alleged legal incident, figuring out what Tom Aspinall is going to do next. Still waiting to hear a more elaborate explanation from John Jones himself. Maybe that comes out before you guys hear the program, but I've talked about that plenty. Me and Danny Segura over on MMA Junkie did a full hour-long reaction in the immediate aftermath. So if you want more in-depth thoughts from me, head over to MMA Junkie's YouTube channel, live tab, check that out, and you can hear me talk all about the John Jones situation. But we want to look forward to UFC 317 here today. Ian McCall, Dustin Poirier joining the show. Enjoy. Going to take a quick break. Make sure to like, subscribe, rate, all that good stuff. Means the world. Love you all. See you back here on the other side of the break with Ian McCall. We're back here on the Bonfire, starting our UFC 317 preview with one of the all-time great flyweights in Ian McCall. Ian, man, how you been, first of all? It's been a while since we talked. You've been retired or had almost 7 years past your final fight at this point. So how's life?
Life is beautiful. You know, I'm Haven't really stepped back into the UFC space coaching wise or anything. I'm a scientific researcher in the field of traumatic brain injury. So I'm leading the charge of how to fix all the athletes that are broken.
I mean, that's amazing. And we could probably do a whole other podcast about that. And I'd love to talk to you, you know, fully about that more at some point. But just give me, I guess, a little bit of insight of what that kind of work is like. And I mean, what kind of benchmarks are you trying to set for yourself in terms of what you can discover, accomplishment? Because we know how difficult the brain is to figure out. And there's so many unknowns about CTE.
Yeah, I don't think the adoring public knew how well-versed or how vast my understanding of the scientific, you know, field was, with the body, with the brain, with how to heal people. I've been trying this. I use my science to cheat without cheating back in the day. You know, if you're not walking the line of what's legal and what's not legal in sports, you're doing yourself a disservice. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be a cheater. I never wanted to be an actual cheater. So I would, find ways, things that were illegal back then, you know, and I would do them. And along the way, I learned, you know, through my own process of healing my traumatic brain injury, which was very, very bad. You know, suicidal. I was addicted to all kinds of things. So that really, those things ruined my career. You called me one of the greatest of all time. I should have been, but my career was marred with addiction, you know, and brain damage, realistically. But we don't need to get into that. I am now CEO of a nonprofit called Athletes Journey Home, where we do traumatic brain injury research using psychedelics. So have our first couple retreats. Our first retreat just happened. Mac Danzig was part of it. Olympic gold medalists, world champion surfing and fighting, and all these sort of amazing individuals that are helping me push this message. We did a mushroom study in Oregon. Now we're about to do an ayahuasca study in Peru. And then we're also doing a big retreat in Colombia with no study, potentially, just more or less getting fighters to help them heal, to find their own sort of salvations, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, that sort of stuff. I'm sure you guys know about the class action lawsuit that's going on.
Of course.
Well, there is a WhatsApp thread that's private. It's only fighters. And there's over like 600 people involved. And of course, I put my one pagers, my PDFs, my pitch decks, my mini documentary we shot on there. And people are like, whoa, like you're doing what? And now I'm excited because I get to help all my peers, all the people that, you know, that helped me build this industry. So, yeah, that's the long and the short of it. You know, we're doing major university studies right now with some of the biggest universities in the world. Having the smartest doctors and scientists on our team. So very fortunate, very lucky, and super excited to show the world the potentials of this.
That's amazing work. And I mean, so essential to our industry, our sport. So like taking the forefront on something like that, I can't imagine how much work it is, but if you guys get it all figured out, I mean, the amount of lives you'll help and change and potentially save could be immeasurable.
Yeah, I brought this to the UFC in 2019. I told them, look, you don't know that your guys are not testing for psilocybin or LSD. And Jeff Nowitzki was like, should we be? Hold on. And I was like, no, just hear me out. And I explained to them the benefits, the healing potentials, the protective benefits, the performative benefits. And now you see athletes from all sports, but specifically the UFC, talking very openly about taking psychedelics while fighting, taking psychedelics in camp, you know, before, during, and after, whatever it is. And I'm proudly the person that kind of brought this to the forefront. I wasn't the only one doing it, but I was the only one doing it in the capacity that I do it in. So, yeah, I'm excited to be this human at this point in my life.
Yeah, and this might be a tough question to even answer because you might not even know at this point. But you know, like obviously, we would like to get these athletes to the point where you're not having to deal with things like this post-career. What would you say from like your research is the biggest influencer on traumatic brain injury? Is it the fights themselves or is it the training that happens and the hard sparring, the years of things that occur outside the octagon?
Hard sparring.
Yeah.
You know, the fights themselves are very damaging, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess you can't have one without the other.
Sure.
So it's just being punched in the head for an entire camp and a fight combined, it is really, really bad for us and traumatic. And it's also the PTSD that we incur, you know, or we give and receive. If you win, you have something called TITS, trauma-induced trauma syndrome. Hmm. It's not healthy for us to hurt people.
Yeah.
And if you do get hurt and you do lose, it's PTSD. You know, it's our job to get into our underwear, climb into a cage, and fight people for blood money on replay. Yeah. And you give and receive PTSD the whole time you're there. So to be able to unpack that, to be able to say these things in front of the leaders at the UFC, like they were taken back, like, wow, no one's ever said that before.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know, that's why I'm saying it. I'm not trying to stop fighting. I'm not trying to stop any sports. I just want people to be safe. That's all.
Yeah. Did they seem receptive to all this stuff? Like things that they want to look into this and, you know, go down this road and being preventative?
The last few years, starting in 2019, they were receptive. They said no at the end of the meetings. And then in 2020, I was on HBO and I helped heal Dean Lister.
Yeah.
And they
amazing show. Anyone go seek that out on Real Sports, I believe, right?
Yeah. That's my favorite show growing up. So to be able to, you know, sit there on 5 grams of mushrooms after a ceremony and talk to Brian Scott, a little inappropriate to be on camera at that point, but we had to live and learn. But I sent that video to Dana White, and Dana was one of the first three people to text me back, and my family, my friends. At that point, people thought it was crazy. Wow. So, which I might have been a little crazy, but maybe I'm still a little crazy, but besides the point, there was a method to my madness. And Dana said, okay, we're back in. So that study came and went because of politics and because it didn't align up. Johns Hopkins is notoriously difficult, as is the UFC, to do business with, at least.
Yeah.
And didn't work. Then I brought a study from the University of Miami, and that didn't work as well because it failed because of funding. The UFC can't fund these sort of things. They can't even push people in the direction, you know, because it's from a legality standpoint. And then about a year plus ago, they said, look, we can't even talk to you. We can't work with you because we went public. So you're on your own. And I said, you know, thank you. A lot of my friends and family were like, well, fuck them. I'm like, hold on a second. No, they're my friends. I still care about them. They just, from a business perspective, they can't mess with me right now. And that's fine. I need to go and do my work. I need to go and collect this data. I need to go legitimize myself even more. So then I can come to them one day and say, look, now it's time. Now it's time. Or maybe I don't even need them. Maybe sure. Like from that perspective, maybe I don't, I really don't need, I don't need them to be pushing people my way. It's just not good for business for them to be a part of TBI anything. So, I still love them very much. They're still my friends and I still would love free tickets to fights. So, and eventually coach people one day, maybe soon. I'm moving to Huntington Beach to be closer to my daughter who moved. So, maybe I can start coaching. I don't know I've reached out to some coaches and no one's got back to me. So I was like, hey, I don't even need to go to fights. Let me just get my hands on these people. Cause I still got it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can still beat up kids in the top five, which I've done recently. Not to brag or anything, but I'm just really good at fighting. So if I can still give myself to the athletes, then that's my life of service. You know, I can help people achieve something that I once achieved that I know how rich the dream is within their bodies and their brains. So if I can help them do that, then, you know, I'm happy.
I love that. That's all so great to hear. And yeah, we need more people kind of giving back to the sport in this way. And yeah, like we're here, dude, if you ever have breakthroughs or things you need to share on this front, I think this is important for the whole entire MMA and combat sports world to get educated more on because, you know, a lot of people just watch this to go in there and watch the guys batter each other without thinking of the implications. And I know that's part of sports and entertainment and all that stuff, but these things have real life consequences. So I guess before we get into UFC 317 here, like, as I said, you know, almost 7 years since the last fight, you talked about it a little bit, still have it. Do you miss it? Or do you feel like given everything you were going through, you walked away at the appropriate time and it was, you know, the right thing for you when it was?
I walked away too late. I shouldn't have even left the UFC. I should have stayed there and tried to get some sort of desk job, which they offered me, you know, but when I showed up to try and try out for a commentator gig, I was on a bender. You know, like I did coke in the bathroom, like trying to like talk more. And I was just like, I was a mess. So, you know, UFC gave me every chance. They gave me everything I could have wanted and I squandered it. whether that's a title shot or that's multiple title shots or that's a job or whatever. So I had to move on and I had to go test the waters in Japan, even though, again, I was snorting Oxycontin before I walked out to my fights, both of them. And no excuses, you know, it was just where my life was at that point. So I'm happy it's over. Do I miss it? Sure. It's a drug that I'll never get again. It's something I miss, the walking out, the adoration from fans. I mean, if I fought now, we know how famous I would be. We know how rich I would be. Especially if I had my shit together and I was sober like I am now, I would probably be looked at as one of the greatest of all time, if not the, you know. I think Demetrius and I would have had more battles and I would have been able to extend everything. Or if I, you know, I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh, I never catch a break. If I wouldn't have gotten screwed over in that first fight and I would have won it, maybe things would be different. Maybe me being a junkie wouldn't have led me to winning 12 world titles like Demetrius. I don't know. I'm not going to think about it too hard because it's the past. But yeah, these are all these what ifs. Realistically, I love MMA. I don't follow it too much because I'm busy and I just have other shit to do, but I do love the sport that I helped create for sure.
Yeah. And you are, again, one of the founding fathers of this flyweight division. You're, like you said, part of that inaugural tournament. We don't need to go too much into it, but you got absolutely fucked in Australia with that, you know, draw and everything. So yeah. We've talked about that many times over the years. It's unfortunate, but you know, I love the perspective you're bringing now, and yeah, you seem to be in the right place and comfortable with what you did. So, I mean, when you look at these guys now, I mean, two of these fights on the International Fight Week pay-per-view this weekend, UFC 317 flyweight fights, have a title fight in the co-main event. When you watch flyweights now, I know you said you don't like follow it intricately. Do you see a massive difference in like evolution from your era to the top level guys now?
Yeah, they're better. They are, you know, they're more well-rounded and they're just technically better from every aspect. I think that, you know, Demetrius and myself and Benavides and these sort of people, we were just as well-rounded, but we didn't have as much time to get as good as they have. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was raised in the sport, so I was one of the first, you know, prodigy sort of people to do it. But I think that, you know, just more time in the space, obviously they're better and they're more well protected. They're better taken care of by the UFC. They have more opportunities to heal and have performative, you know, tools put into their toolbox. So, yeah, you know, they're just it's overall a better sport. It's a little bland, you know. I think a lot of us feel that way because the psychos that raised me are not a part of it anymore. They're all broken and they're all in and out of jail and rehab and doing bad. So we needed to move on from those sort of people. You know, whether it's Phil Baroni allegedly killing someone, you know, his girlfriend in Mexico, or BJ having Capgras syndrome, which is people think it is meth induced psychosis of some sort or schizophrenia, but it's not. Look up Capgras syndrome. It's TBI related things where you think people are not the same people that they are. Nick Diaz, you know, being homeless and addicted. The list goes on. I'm trying to deal with all these people. I'm in contact with all these people and their families. That's and their friends. So someone's got to clean up the mess. But now these, it's cool to be healthy. It's not cool to go out with Chuck Liddell after and take a bunch of ecstasy and have orgies and party until like 3 days later. I mean, for most of us, at least, most people don't party after fights because they know they took a lot of damage and they want to heal their brains because fighters are commodities now. Fighters are, or we always have been, but now you realize what you are. And you want to extend your shelf life for as long as possible. And that's partially why I do what I do, is because I will help extend these people's lives for just the sake of living longer and not dying of a neurological disorder, but also how many fights they can get under their belt, how much money they can make, how they can carry themselves as a healed individual than just a crazy fighter that was driven by trauma that ended up in this crazy space. You know, they can, like people like John Jones and Conor McGregor, should be looked at as heroes, not as villains. And they both done enough dumb shit in their lives to be looked at as villains. And I know that they both hopefully will have an opportunity. I think Connor's really pushing back and trying to be a better version of himself, but he still does a lot of dumb shit. John can't, I mean, maybe John's better. I don't know. I don't, like I said, I don't pay enough attention. But I think that, you know, these athletes need to be looked at as heroes.
Yeah. Well, we just had another incident with John Jones a couple days ago that came the night before his retirement. So we'll see what comes of that, if those allegations prove true. But yeah, a lot of kind of worrying signs there. Go ahead.
What did he do?
Allegedly, according to the police details that came out through Albuquerque, he was fled the scene of a hit and run. If that sounds familiar from the 2016 incident, they found the girl that they pulled up to in the vehicle had no pants on. She had said that they had been partying for a few days, done mushrooms, gotten an accident. He ran away from the scene. They apparently called him, and he or someone who sounded like him answered the phone and basically sounded very drunk and said he was going to basically threaten the officers through third party means, kind of saying like, I have friends who could do this, this, and this. And then apparently tried calling this woman's phone like 14, 15 times. And then, you know, like a few things here and there, they reached out to him and, you know, he said he wasn't there, wasn't involved. And then his lawyer just put out a statement today saying the woman was lying. He wasn't there at all. And she's just trying to use John's name to, I don't know, get something over him or put the emphasis off herself or something. It's not great.
Wow. Well, yeah, you know, I've never had the best relationship with John in the first place. So I tried, I've reached out to his, you know, his team and coaches and stuff, but to no, we didn't get anywhere with it. And you know what? Sorry, I'm not sorry. I just kind of over that one. Cause I don't know. I don't want to be associated with people like that.
Sure. Yeah. And if you don't want the help, it's very hard to give it to someone too, right? I'm sure you're experiencing a lot of that.
I wish him the best. I didn't even know he retired.
So. Yeah. It was a surprise. Dana White announced it at the post-fight press conference in Baku, Azerbaijan, which I don't think anyone thought that's where John Jones's career comes to an end. But crazy stuff. But anyways, back to 317. Alexandre Pantoja has become a very great champion for the UFC. This is going for his fourth title defense. He's kind of lapping the division at this point. Like, this is a rematch from the Ultimate Fighter, so that was an exhibition fight with Kai Car France, but still already has a win. Exhibition on his resume, has beaten most of these guys twice already. Do you look at him as a pretty special fighter and champion? Like, are you impressed with what he's done in this reign so far?
Very, very much so. He is extremely well-rounded, and you know, not just well-rounded, but really high level at all this sort of stuff. I think what he lacks in speed, he makes up for in just technical acumen and accuracy. And his jiu-jitsu is so good. His wrestling's pretty damn good. I think he's a great champion, and I think that the division has really good depth. But there could be more to it. You know, I think that we have that young Japanese fighter coming up and a few other people that could give him some serious trouble. But, you know, he's shown over and over again that he's extremely hard to beat.
Yeah, he's extremely well-rounded. He's got the championship confidence. It's all there. It seems like he's giving the respect, at least, to his opponents. I interviewed him last week, and he's like, I view Kai Car France as the Mike Tyson of the flyweight division. Like, that's the kind of power I see him having. It's a good quote to, like, build up the fight a little bit, but do you see him, like, Kai Car France is one of the bigger or maybe the biggest knockout threat in this division right now?
For sure. For sure. I think he's the biggest. He's got the speed and the power and the tenacity, the will to really hurt somebody. And he's just a little crazy person. So I'm excited to see this one go down.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think like Kai can muster up an effort to dethrone Pantoja, or is he just on such a high, so much confidence as the champion already has the history with him? Like how hard is it to unseat a guy like that?
You know, Kai can do it. He just got to put his hands on his chin. You know, and I think the speed is going to be a big factor. The power is going to be a big factor. But Pantoja can take a beating, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, he was saying, I know I have a hell of a chin. I don't want to use it too much, but it seems like what's it like when you're a fighter and you know, like, you can probably take those hardest shots, not that you're wanting them or going in trying to take them, but when you have a confidence in your chin, how much does that just elevate your ability to do any sort of different things in there?
Oh, it's big. I used to have it. You know, the button gets pushed too many times, then it goes away. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even John Lineker couldn't put me away. You know, so like you have it, you enjoy it, you use it for your advantage, and then one day it just stops. So I think that he's, you know, I think this is going to be a really good fight.
Yeah, and I guess last thing on this one, obviously Demetrius Johnson, we all consider him the flyweight goat, given what he's done. He got 11 title defenses. Pantoja would be at 4 here. Everyone keeps asking, like, what are your plans? Are you going to move up if you keep dominating? He says he wants to push this reign as far as possible, try to break or get close to DJ's record. What would this guy have to do for us to say he's better than Demetrius Johnson now? He's exceeded his resume. Does it just have to be the number of flyweight title defenses, or can he do it another way?
He has to get to 12. Yeah. You know, just to beat DJs and to get more on that level, he would have to for surely beat 12 or beat 11 title defenses.
Yeah, which would be tough. That's another like 5-6 years, and I think he's already 34 years old, so that would be tough to stay on top of this division.
Exactly. He could arguably be better with some crazy wins, but we'll see.
Yeah, we need some flying arm bars and stuff like that in there to match up to the DJ highlight reel.
Exactly.
For sure. Okay, and then the other big flyweight fight on this card is Brandon Royval versus Joshua Van. It was originally supposed to be your old buddy Manel Kapp. He pulled out of this fight. His UFC career has been insane with all the injuries and pullouts and replacements and stuff like that. But Joshua Van, 23 years old, his third fight of the year already. He'll fight on both pay-per-views this month. He fought in Newark a couple weeks ago and is now turning around 3 weeks later. So, like, super impressive there. Yeah, for sure. Brandon Royval has seemed like a pretty impressive guy too. Fights consistently. He seems to put it all out there. What have you made of him?
Really well rounded. We haven't seen Van really too much on the ground, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where the threat's going to lie for him, is on the ground.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, these are all good fights for sure. And I think it shows where this flyweight division is at. I mean, they were talking about cutting this thing entirely a few years ago. And now we have on what is the biggest quote unquote card of the year so far, two fights on that main card. So it's going well, I'd say. Ian, who would be your Mount Rushmore of flyweights? Your four guys?
Myself and Demetrius. Man, who else was up there?
Joe B.
Maybe Joe B. And then the Brazilian cat. I can't think of his name right now. Who was champion for a while.
Flyweight champion?
Yeah. He's now at flyweight. Or he's now at featherweight. Or sorry, now at bantamweight.
Davison Figueiredo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could be up there. Brandon Moreno would maybe have an argument. Maybe
so. Drop Joe B off and drop him in Brandon Moreno for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a solid one. I think Pantoja is very much flirting with that. Maybe him over Figgy or something. I don't know. It's close though. I think you have the right shortlist there, Ian.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciated this. This was awesome to catch up with you and, you know, hear more about what you're doing. And yeah, please, like, I'd love to speak to you more about this as things evolve, because these are efforts that we should all be supporting in the MMA community. I guess if people do want to find out more about the work you're doing, where could they find that?
AthletesJourneyHome.com or follow me on social media.
Okay, perfect, Ian. Well, I appreciate you making your debut on the Bonfire here. Hopefully we can get you back in the future, man. It means a lot that you took the time. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be back to break down the lightweight fights, and thank you so much for the time. Continuing our very special International Fight Week edition of the Bonfire, joining us in the middle of his final training camp, a very busy man, a little over 3 weeks out from UFC 318, is Dustin Poirier. Dustin, thank you so much for being here to help break down the UFC 317 title fight. How's it going, man?
Good, man. I just got back to the house. I just got beat up at the gym by a Polish guy, so it's going good. Right in the thick of it.
Yeah, I saw him just post. What an honor it was to go five fives with you. Are you feeling,
dude? He beat. Let's not beat around the bush. That guy beat me up today, bro.
Yeah, see, the Polish guys just get you. Gamrot first. Now this dude.
I got this guy punching the shit out of me. Gamrot's twisting my legs into pretzels. I mean, it just don't stop.
Yeah. So does this make you be like, oh, we're only a few more weeks and I don't have to ever do this again?
Nah, bro, I'm going to miss it. It's bittersweet. I'm going to miss it. I'm just embracing it all, man. Trying to enjoy the whole process.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome, man. Well, let's get a little bit into UFC 317 here. Obviously, Ilya Topuria fighting Charles Oliveira in the main event for this vacant lightweight title after Islam Makhachev moves up. I want to start with Ilya here, Dustin. Obviously, everyone praising his boxing, saying he's one of the best out there. When you watch this guy, like, what makes his boxing so good and effective?
Good work. The crispness of his the shots he throws out, his technique, his positioning. I mean, a lot of stuff, man. He's really, really good and really dangerous. And he was putting people away at 145. To see him going up to 55, and he's going to have more ass in those punches. You know, he's a very dangerous guy. Like I said, when I was working for ESPN during the Max fight, like, he's everything he said he was coming into that fight, and he proved it.
Yeah, I guess I feel like everyone's just assuming it's a given the power will translate. Like, obviously he kind of had that death touch a little bit at 45, but like, it kind of reminds me of Connor. He was, you know, stiffing guys at 45, but then, you know, he had to knock Eddie Alvarez down 3 times before finishing him, and like stuff like that. So is it wrong to just assume 100% it's going to be that same type of power or more?
It's tough to say. You know, it depends how his speed comes over to 55, because he's good in the pocket. But his technique, without a doubt, is going to transfer over to 155. And I think he's putting away guys with power, but with skill, with more skill. Of course, the guy can punch. He's going to have more weight to punch with now. But it's technique and timing that's really hitting guys at the right time, at the right angle, that are putting people down, man.
Yeah, so that, like, even if maybe it doesn't translate perfectly, the technique makes up for that in your mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that being said, I've never seen Ilya in person. But what I hear is he's a smaller guy. You know, Charles is a big guy. So is Max. He found Max's chin against the fence. Not saying he can't do that against Charles, but Charles does get hit a lot. You know, I got some people shitting on me on Twitter for saying I think Ilya's going to beat Charles after Full Violence posted that video of me saying that in the boxing gym. But that's just what I think. Charles does take a lot of shots. And Ilya's a guy who's – we haven't seen it really, but he's confident in his jiu-jitsu. He's going to follow Charles down. You know, when I hurt Charles – And it's rinse and repeat. A lot of guys have hurt Charles, but we don't follow. We try to make him get back up and touch him again. You know, I think Ilya, if he does sit Charles down, he's going to follow him up, get into his guard. And we've seen Charles, like, when guys go into his guard and play jiu-jitsu with him and aren't afraid of that, kind of he starts breaking a little bit, I think. But we'll see what Charles shows up. It's a fun fight. It's a fun matchup. I think Charles needs to fight Ilya the same way he fought me. He was all the way in. Or he was all the way out. He never really fought me at that boxing range. If he was in, it was clinch work, body locks, you know, a lot of energy, but he smothered my boxing. Or he was at kicking range using those long front kicks. He's a long rangey guy. He needs to be all the way in or all the way out. He cannot play the boxing pocket game. You know, he needs to be clinching. He doesn't need to be exchanging shots in the pocket with a shorter guy who can crack.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing too, and it was further emphasized. I just saw a stat before we started recording here. Ilya Topuria has not thrown a head kick or a body kick in his entire UFC career. So, like, it's a pretty one-dimensional in terms of, like, the stand-up striking, obviously very dangerous, but I do feel like Charles, like, you need to give him different looks to a degree, right? Like, if you're just doing one thing.
He will fire on the legs, though. Wasn't he smashing Max's calf up and... But Max is a guy who wears that calf damage well. You know, we saw Volk tear his leg up and he still came forward. So we'll see. But I think Charles needs to be in the clinch or at kicking range at all times in this fight, which a 25-minute fight is tough to do that. He's going to have to dance in the fire a little bit to land his shots too. So it's an exciting fight. I just think Ilya touches him, he's going to follow him to the ground.
Yeah. I guess what would be the case for Charles to win? I know you said a little bit there, like, is there any path to advising him to trying offensive wrestling and maybe put Ilya on his back?
For sure. Well, I think Ilya does have good takedown defense, and Charles, even being big, you know, I was able to stop a lot of his shots against the fence and make him go back to the body lock. He eventually got underneath me and got around to my back and jumped on my back like a jam sport. So if he can close the distance and get into that clinch work with Ilya, instead of boxing there or trying to dirty box, holding one tie, I think he needs to use that body lock, try to get behind him. If he can close the distance and get a hold to Ilya's body, being the longer guy, maybe he can creep around to the back. And I mean, Charles can finish anybody if he gets their back.
Yeah, truly. Most submissions in UFC history, most finishes. Like, I don't know, I kind of have that gut feeling that Charles might be able to do something here, but I kind of felt the same way against Sean O'Malley, against Merab, and that could not have gone worse. So the gut doesn't always lead you in the right way. So I don't know.
Yeah. Nothing makes sense. MMA stats, nothing makes sense when the lights come on and you get under there and it's actual go time. Anything could happen, man. That's why we love this sport so much.
Yeah, no kidding. What would be the more impressive accomplishment for you here? Both these guys can make history with a win. Charles could become the first 2-time lightweight champion, and Ilya could be the first guy to win belts in 2 divisions with an undefeated record. Which one of those would be more impressive to you?
Man, They're both so crazy high up on the list. Me rooting for the dogs, I'd have to go with Charles reclaiming the throne and getting his belt back, you know, being knocked down and having to go through the losses and get another shot at the champ, get your belt taken away, something crazy with the weight stuff when he was on weight, I heard, and then he wasn't. Going up, or I mean, not going up, trying to get the belt back against Islam and getting submitted, and then, you know, people trashing you. So Fairweather fans, you know, like, you're on top, you're the king. You have a couple bad nights, you suck. So to see him go through all that and then come back and reclaim, that would be crazy impressive for me. That's my point of view. But going undefeated and claiming two belts, two different divisions, is crazy hard to do. But I just like the underdog.
No, it's an amazing story for Charles. I think he would be the first lightweight champion, 35 or older too. So like, that would say a lot about, you know, him and what he could do at this age, and UFC fight 35 for him as well. It's kind of weird for Charles too. Like, this is his third time fighting for the lightweight belt, and they've all been vacant title fights. Like, he's never challenged a standing champion. They've always been.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, because the Chandler fight was after Habib retired, so vacant belt. Yep. The Islam fight was technically for the vacant belt, and then this one is for the vacant belt too. So I don't know. Like, obviously you've had your title shots. Do you think it would be? I don't know. I know you guys are all motivated, but like, I'm sure it's a little different when there's that champion there, right? And like, they have that belt and you're trying to dethrone them.
Sure. But he's as motivated as you can be going into those fights, you know, and he's defended the lightweight title a few times. So this is another title fight. I don't think he's adding that stuff to it. You know, he's been doing this too long.
Yeah. What do you make of Ilya's confidence here? He started the week by saying it's going to be a first round finish. I heard him today saying he's going to win in 2 to 3 minutes. I assume by the time we get to the press conference, he'll say he's going to finish him in like 60 seconds or less or something.
Bro, a lot of times guys and fighters' mindset, like, words become things, man. Like, they can talk stuff into their body believing it. It's just on the opposite side of that. What happens when Charles is getting off the stool for the third, fourth, fifth round? You see your own blood and you're in a real fight. After telling yourself this for however many weeks, that you're going to run through this guy, and the guy's in front of you, touching you, and still there when you thought he wouldn't be. That's only Ilya knows that, you know, we'll find out. That's the beauty of this.
Yeah, we will find out.
And I hope we get to see it. I hope Charles shows up and we get to see that kind of fight.
Yeah, that would be great to see. And I mean, yeah, Charles, just all the history he's had, if he can add this final accolade to that, that would be pretty
amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. Amazing.
For real. And yeah, I mean, Ilya, the confidence all there. Where would you think if he goes from knocking out Volk to knocking out Max, and if he knocks out Charles, is this one of like the greatest three fight winning streaks we've ever seen?
For sure. For sure. I mean, these are legends we're talking about, you know, stopping a guy who's never been stopped in Max, beating Volk, who has long time top of the game, like Charles, another former champ who's putting on great performances. Like, man, what can I say about this guy? I'll say it again. If he does it, he's everything he said he is, man. He's a dangerous, dangerous dude.
For sure. And as I said off the top of the show, obviously we have a new sponsor here on the Bonfire. And if anyone is looking to place bets on this fight, MyBookie is where real fight fans are cashing in. MyBookie is built for moments like this. You got boosted odds, early cash outs, live lines for every fight, and you can take advantage of every swing. If you want to sign up for the first time, mention my name or use the code word BON and get a sportsbook bonus for your first deposit. Drop $50, they'll give you $25. Go in with $100, and MyBookie will add a $50 bonus on top of that. So UFC 317 will hit different if your money's on the line with MyBookie. And make sure to gamble responsibly, of course, out there, Dustin. And
hey, yeah, no, bro. Yeah, no, I like MyBookie. I work with them as well, and I also go to their casino a lot and play slot machines like a degenerate. Especially when I'm in training camp, I got lots of downtime between training sessions, and I'm in the condo by myself. Hit the slots, check them out, but gamble responsibly.
For sure. And this is, I mean, as of right now, Ilya is around a minus 400. Charles is in the plus 300 range. Pretty steep odds here. But I think the prop bets are probably like some of the better stuff to look at. We obviously talk about the finishes, and like, it's an 88% finish rate versus an 89% finish rate. So if you
What are the odds on fight doesn't go the distance? Because somebody's going to get busted up. You know, I think that's a good bet, but I bet it's probably like minus 300 or something. They know somebody's getting beat here.
Yeah, there's a few of those. If you want to get like some high plus money, you could try to pick a round and a type of exact format of how it ends. That's a tough one. But I'm curious what you think of this one, Dustin. You can get a booster on this one through MyBookie. Currently around plus 450 for this fight to go to a decision. Do you see a world anywhere where this goes five rounds?
I think both guys are too dangerous. Nah, I don't think so.
We need a knockout here, Dustin. Do you remember what was the last UFC title fight to end in a knockout? It was John Jones versus Stipe Miocic in November. We haven't had a knockout in a UFC title fight once this year.
The spinning kick, the spinning body kick, the McRib is back.
Yeah, it's been all decisions and submissions and stuff. I don't know. Yeah, do you think that streak ends here? It's probably going to be a knockout.
I mean, there's a good chance Ilya touches him and puts him away. You know, we've seen Charles dropped a lot of times. I don't know, man. This is a tricky fight. They all are. Good thing UFC fighters can't bet on the UFC because they're saving me money. They're saving me money.
For real. Yeah. And I guess the fallout of this, like whoever wins this, who do you think when you look in this division will be the first challenger? Justin Gaethje is out here saying like, you know, it's title shot or bust. I'm not going to fight anyone else. Armin Tsarukyan is weighing in as the backup, even though it's kind of been said like that doesn't guarantee he fights the winner. But I think trying to get himself back in the good graces after what happened in January, you know, there's the Ilya and Patty history, Patty Pimblett. What do you kind of see out there as who might get the shot at the winner here?
I think Patty's getting closer, but I wouldn't think they would give him a shot right now. You know, he did just beat Chandler. Maybe one more big win, and he's knocking on the door. Obviously, with Armin, UFC reaching out to him and putting him as the backup, they have still high hopes for him getting in there for the title. But to me personally, I would pick Gaethje.
Yeah. Is that a tricky game to play with the UFC when you say, like, it's either title shot or nothing else?
I mean, a guy who's done everything he's done with the company and put on the shows, you know, it's must watch TV every time he's out there. And he just beat another high ranked guy. And he's coming towards, you know, he said it, the end of his career. Like, if he only has a few left, he's still fighting the best guys. Put him in there and see if he can make that dream a reality. And the division keeps moving forward.
Yeah, and I think it's all product. You know this as well as anyone. Timing, circumstance, you know, if you're ready and someone else is not, like, you could easily get that shot. So just be there and be the guy and be present, and you have a good opportunity to put yourself in position, right?
Right, man. You never know what's happening in this game. Guys get hurt. Fights fall out. Fights come together quick. Anything can happen. That's why you can't be too far away from the shape and the mindset you need to be in, especially when you're an active fighter fighting often. Like, anything can happen in this game.
Yeah. And I know people are probably going to ask you this. So I'm just going to throw it out here because I feel comfortable enough, Dustin. If you win the way you want to on July 19th, what's happening? Is like Jolie deleting Dana and Hunter's number off your phone? What if they what if they call you and say, hey, like, I know you want Ilya before this?
I think I'm done, man. I'm done. This I'm putting everything in. I'm in the best shape of my life, having a good camp. Super focused. You know, before I started a diet like 6 weeks before I showed up to training camp here in Florida. I completely quit drinking like 6 weeks before or 5 weeks before I showed up here. Like, I'm trying to do everything I can to be my best for my last one, honor this game, put on a show and go out there. And this is it for me, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. No, I like that. And of course, you know, for people also be on the lookout leading up to 319, we were 318. We were with Dustin for a few days at ATT and filmed something very cool that's going to be coming out ahead of the fight, kind of based on the retirement bout. And yeah, Dustin, you're good. You can retire now. You got the guillotine finish against me in the gym, so you're good.
I got one, dude. I get them. That's no breaking news, bro. I get them all the time in practice. I just never hit one in a fight.
I know, I'm teasing you. I didn't ask you this when we were down there. What is around the retirement fight? What's the charity goal for the Good Fight Foundation? Can you share anything on that?
Well, right now we're gearing up for the back to school drive we do with the backpacks and school supplies for the year. So a lot of the foundation's money is getting funneled into that, getting all the highlighters, binders, spot, like dividers. We do all this piece by piece. So whatever the school supply list is for that year, we usually do around, I'll say 1,200, 1,300 backpacks, but each backpack is filled with everything on the list. So pencils, pens, highlighters, erasers, flashcards, everything, and all these boxes come in huge bulk orders, and we have to break everything down, set up an assembly line. So there's a long road. It's a big process to do all these things to get everything ready. So that's what we're funneling everything into right now. And as soon as I finish this fight, go back home and start packing backpacks, because the school, beginning of school, is right around the corner. So I'm not keeping this fight kit and these gloves. My retirement fight kit, I will auction off the week after the fight, and we'll put it back into the foundation. The foundation actually auctions it off. So it goes straight into the foundation, and finish paying off for whatever we owe on these backpack drive, and then start gearing up for the Thanksgiving drive and just keep things moving.
Yeah. And I know, you've been doing this for a while now with the foundation, and, you know, these kids that you're helping out, you know, with the back to school drive, you know, the first time you probably did it, those kids are way older now, and other people you've helped. Have you seen now, because this has gone on for so many years, like the beneficial fallout for these people that you've helped as they've gotten older and, you know, maybe had this assistance impact their lives over a long enough span now?
It's funny you ask me that. Actually, not too long ago, a buddy of mine was at a store in Louisiana he owns, and somebody pulled up and said, hey, he's actually on the board of my foundation, and said, hey, my son's in the car. We got a backpack a couple years from you guys. And he was in the back seat. So that's kind of cool to hear. But just being there on the ground and handing the backpacks to these kids and these families, seeing their faces and seeing, you know, it's incredible. It's you have to be there to really get that feeling for it. But it's awesome to see.
Yeah. And this happens, what, the Monday after the fight?
I have to, my wife's not here right now. I'd have to ask her the exact day. We'll announce it, all that, on the foundation, and I'll share the info. But I believe it's, the packing might be going on the week after the fight. But the exact day of the backpack drive, I need to find out so we can talk about it more. But I'm not sure. My wife lines all that up.
Yeah. Well, I will ask you at the pre-fight press conference, as is tradition.
I'll have the date for you then.
Okay. Sounds good. And what's the status of Lil Wayne? Is he actually going to be walking you out as of now, or?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's walking out with me, but he's going to be performing in the arena for sure.
Wow. Okay. So I thought originally you just wanted him to walk out, and maybe there's going to be like some, you know, a song of his playing. He's going to perform and walk you out.
Yeah.
That's fucking sick.
Or he's going to perform in like an area. We're still working out the details, but it's happening.
Yeah, because this has only happened, I think, once in UFC history with the Conor and Chad Mendes fight at UFC 189, where, you know, Sinead O'Connor and I can't remember who walked Chad out. But yeah, Dana doesn't like the live performance as much. But I think that goes to show. I mean, I'm sure you saw that interview he did with the local Louisiana, I think it was like a news outlet, and was confirming this whole show is for you and for your retirement.
Bro, I mean, so much had to go on behind the scenes. People have no idea how long this was in the process of working out the kinks and getting everybody on the same page with the athletic commission in Louisiana and just the UFC coming back to New Orleans. It's been over 10 years since I fought for the UFC in Louisiana. It's been over 10 years since they've been back. Mm-hmm. So to get everybody on the same page and the UFC going out of their way to make this happen for me, dude, I'm so appreciative. This is like a dream come true for me. So I just want to say thank you to Louisiana. Thank you to Dana, Hunter, everybody who made this possible. Because when I first pitched this idea to them, I for sure thought they would just entertain it and kind of move on. And then it really took off, and they had to do work to get it done.
Yeah, it's going to be great for the sport. Are they still going to add a co-main event under you guys? I feel like people are waiting for one more big fight on this card.
Dude, I don't know who. I haven't heard anything. I have no clue.
Yeah, I think a lot of their focus has been on this John Jones situation. Now that that's kind of resolved, maybe they can start focusing on making sure all that stuff is buttoned up. But we're getting close. It's 3.5 weeks away. So
yeah, exactly. And I'm excited to see who's Aspinall gonna fight. Now he's a undisputed champion. Who's next?
I think it's probably gonna be Gone. I think that's what they're talking about right now.
Okay.
And then maybe he goes out there and beats him quicker than John Jones did, and you get on the mic and saying, you know, this is your one legit heavyweight win. I just beat him faster than you did, and who knows how that changes things. But the John Jones,
the divisions have to keep moving on, though. Same thing with the lightweight division. Like we hit, you know, stalls in these divisions, and it messes everything up. People have to be active, and divisions have to move on. It's getting too top heavy. There's so many good guys who are winning and putting on great performances and climbing the ladder. We can't stall this. You know, you have to fight.
Yeah, so you were okay with how they like handled Islam moving on and kind of going to welterweight and like, you know, just taking the belt from him essentially.
Yeah, well, the lightweight division is one of the main divisions that's been top heavy installed for years and years. And if they would allow that to happen, all respect to Islam, it would do it even more. Yeah. So I'm not sure if we're seeing like a new wave of no more champ at the same time. you know. But Islam's a big guy. I think he's going to do well at 170. But I'm wondering, will that affect him if he ever decides to go back down to 55, you know, putting on the extra muscle? He's a big dude. So we'll see. But it's all exciting, man, to me, because I'm a fan of the sport. I'm a fan.
Yeah, for real. Do you think he beats Jack Della Maddalena?
I think it's going to – we'll find out first, second round how much trouble he has getting him down. I think if he gets those takedowns, he's going to get the win. If Jack can stop those takedowns, which he does have good takedown defense, I think the boxing and the size could wear on Islam and give him some problems. But Islam's – his striking's, you know, awkward and different. You have to worry so much about the takedown. You can't plant your feet and get – throw off those number combinations and really rip and sit on your punches, because he's going to change levels. So it changes the way you fight. For me, it did. I'm speaking from experience. So we'll see how Jack approaches and how Jack executes out there. But if you're worried about takedowns, you know, your shots are different. You're not sitting on everything and standing in front of the guy. You're trying to move and be light on your feet. I think the first two rounds will tell us how this fight's going to go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if he wins and Ilya wins, because Ilya's also saying this week he wants to go up to welterweight if he wins this, which, as you said, would stall out the division further. I don't think the other lightweights want that, but I couldn't imagine 5'7 Ilya fighting at 170. That'd be crazy.
I'm interested to see, and this is 5'7 on paper. I don't know how big the guy is. We'll find out at press conference and weigh-ins when they square off. I think Charles is going to be a lot bigger than him. It's going up to 170, man. Some of these guys are 200 pounds. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Dustin, before I get you out of here, I guess you know, you said you're doing everything right in camp. It's all going good. What in these next 3 weeks, I guess, before you head back to Louisiana, like what are you trying to conquer here? What are the benchmarks for the rest of camp that you want to hit?
I'm trying to maintain my weight. I got really low early, so I'm kind of maintaining the weight, not killing myself, trying to lose anything. You know, I'm just going to stay here till fight week where I'm at, sharpening things up, staying injury free, keeping my rhythm and my timing. I wouldn't say cruise control because I'm still in the thick of it, but just mindful training, you know, pushing myself, practicing techniques, counter punching, obviously, getting ready for a high volume fight against Max. Those things, just what I've been doing pretty much the last few weeks, just a little bit more detail.
Fascinating. Yeah, man. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on here to break down UFC 317, being a lot of fun. I will see you in a couple of weeks in New Orleans, my first visit ever there. So I'm freaking stoked for this. It's going to be a hell of a week, man. Everything I've heard from some people at the UFC is like the city is going above and beyond to make this like a super extravagant, extraordinary event. So I think it's going
to
be something.
I can't wait. And it's already a special place to go to without something like this happening. So it's going to be a great week there. I'm excited to do it at home and finally put the gloves down where it all started, man, Louisiana. So I'm carrying the flag.
Love it. All right. Thank you for the time, Dustin. I'll take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. What a show today. I hope you all like that. What great stuff from Ian McCall and Dustin Poirier. Some crazy stories there from McCall. Just wow. That guy is not hesitant to open up and share. And credit to him, though, for the work he is doing to our athletes, for the sport, for the community. Hopefully, he finds a path to helping any fighter and every fighter who experiences post-career traumatic brain injuries. So good stuff there. I hope you all enjoyed the conversations, the analysis. We're doing the best we can. We're not out in Las Vegas. The first time in about 10 years I've missed an international fight week, but we got some important personal stuff going on here. A little over 2 months out from my wedding, so had to get some ducks in a row. Couldn't make it to Vegas, but I will be happy to cover this one from home and watch it all unfold and still bring you great content from this very spot. So my next trip will be for the aforementioned UFC 318 and Dustin Poirier's retirement fight. But for now, we are all going to enjoy UFC 317. International Fight Week is a great time for our sport. Hopefully, I know we've had some rough events lately. This turned things around and continues the summer schedule on a very positive and entertaining manner. So we will see how that goes. Next week, we will, of course, be back at the mid-year point of the 2024 calendar, so we will see what we have to digest in the aftermath of UFC 317. Once again, please make sure to support the show in any way you can. Follow my bookie, invest in those promo codes if you can, if you want to bet on UFC 317 or anything else in the upcoming MMA schedule. For now, that does it for another edition of the show, and until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.